You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio here on 860 AM. If you live in southeastern Pennsylvania, the state of New Jersey, or northern Delaware, that is our radio broadcast range. I'm encouraging you to go to the phone and invite family members and friends to tune in because we are going to have a very open forum broadcast today. And today's program may not be for the faint of heart because Rich Loges, Mark Andel, and Larkin Conley are in the mood to let it all hang out. Before I turn the microphone over to them, I want you to also email family members and friends who you know are interested in our broadcast. And I think that our members of the communities that we serve on the radio and our internet people who live at a distance are really one big happy family. As I go out to various events, more and more people tell me, this is a message that can't be beat. It's really the Mark Andel message. It's common sense, by American. And as always, I encourage you to go to your internet site and go to the madeinamericastore.com and see all the things that have to be offered to you from the Made in America store. And by the way, I spoke to Curtis Ellis this week. And Curtis gives his best wishes. He is on the road working on the America First Project. I attended an event in Washington last Wednesday, and it was a very interesting event last Wednesday evening. And a lot of people are really into the Buy American Made campaign, and I'm very happy. And because of that, I have to say a special thank you to Mark Andel, who, as you know, is the founder of the Made in America store, to Larkin Conley, national small business advocate, and Rich Loges, the principal of RJL Technology Integration. Our engineer is Henry Chaplinsky, and I'm here with you. My name is Michael Blihash, and I'm sure you know that name very well. We also had a very interesting parade on Sunday. I want to thank all of the people that took our flyers and let me know that they tune in to the broadcast and are speaking up where we shop. And because of our efforts, and thanks to everyone who's promoting jobs and job skills here in the USA, it's interesting to say that the world has really changed so much that job skills for many of the products that are sold in America are now located out of this country. But I feel we're in a new direction in America, and a lot of it is a result of our supporters. Our supporters are, I guess you could call that the silent majority is now starting to speak up. We're all part of a growing and positive campaign which foreign importers and foreign product merchandisers really don't like. They don't like the message at all. And as I speak to those kind of people, they just, you know, are not happy because they are getting a lot of money for products that are foreign made, made in cheaper salary nations, sending it over here and then charging us the price that an American worker would be charged. They're charging us, if they buy it in America for $2, they're selling it here for $20. And that's a lot of profit. And most of the people, as I mentioned before, even on ties that some of the visitors see me wearing in the exhibit hall, they say, oh, that's a foreign, I look, no, made in the USA. And the thing is, those ties are sold in various stores for the same price as the foreign made ties. So it's something's got to be changed around on this whole thing. I know that it's going to take years, and people always say it's going to take years, but at least Larkin, Mark, and Rich, we are turning this thing around in our favor, in America's favor. Additionally, I'm also seeing that big business is not throwing as much money at political campaigns as they did before. Why is that? Well, now that they're receiving less profits from foreign products, they don't have the amount of discretionary money to share with lobbyists and political candidates. So I get a lot of calls from political people asking for money. They don't ever say, well, for the money, I'm going to promote this. Nothing. Just, we need money for the campaign. And the answer now is, I'll consider it, but call me after the campaign. Businesses are feeling better to put their discretionary money to training American employees, which will benefit them and their business and their profits here in the USA. And as Mark Andel often says, there are no tariffs on American-made products. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Mark. Mark, tell us something interesting that happened this week since our last broadcast.
Yeah, how you doing, Mike and Rich? And I don't know if Larkin's on yet, but welcome to Henry and listeners. Mike, it's been exciting times. As you know, last week we did our 800th bus, but over the past weekend we had, 10 buses. Saturday we had five come at once, so 250 to 300 great Americans in the store at once, and boy, is that a whirlwind, Mike. A lot of great things. Talking to these bus drivers, I'd like to say the one was all fired up. I've never seen so many help wanted signs across this country ever. And I'm like, really? So everybody's even saying, geez, I might not have voted for the man, but our mills are open and my stocks are doing better. And even if they didn't like him, I'm starting to hear from these buses, Mike, good things, because they're starting to admit things are going positive. But I got a lot of neat things, Mike, I'd like to bring up. Yesterday, I walked two teachers, technical teachers, industrial arts teachers, you'd love it, from a school, a Pioneer High School, not too far from where I'm located in, outside of Elma, New York, in Arcade. These two teachers asked for a tour, bring 19 kids. They asked for about probably 3-4 months ago. Sue set it up, and Evelyn, that came, she runs Dream It, Do It. So it was a neat day. 19 kids came through General Welding and through the Made in America. And I asked these teachers, Larry Cook and Don Kress, you know, what do you have in this Pioneer School? Well, they've got the lathes. They've got the equipment, the welders. And it was, Mike, it was music to my ears because it's what we always talk about. So this school is doing what we need to get done. And these students that came were 9th grade to 12th grade, all had an interest in entrepreneurism, working with their hands, CAD drawing, engineering. Great day. So we spent 3 hours. They learned a lot. I asked them. They love to see hands-on. They love to see and hear from people that have different success stories or hardships. And we were tough on them. The teacher said, a lot of kids are lazy. They don't apply themselves. But he said also a lot of teachers are lazy, Mike. So it was a great day, though. Pioneer, and that was a big movement. I also want to bring up, I was asked to be a speaker tomorrow across where Rich used to almost live, almost by White Plains there in Verona, New York, for the New York State Retired Teachers Association. Hundreds of teachers, and they asked me to tell the story. So that's movement, Mike. And, just today from our local other school, they got a new program, Shark Tank. They're taking entrepreneurs. So they want me to maybe be a coach or a judge on it. So much movement, Mike. And, I thank you for having the show and all of us for all we do, because there is a lot of positive going on in this country right now.
More positive than we hear in the news media.
Yes,
and that's what
absolutely
drives you crazy. When I turn on, and I don't usually watch for a long time anymore, I turn it on, it's the same thing. It's like I could have watched that thing 5 days ago, weeks ago.
Why, Mike?
Well, I don't understand why the advertisers continue to spend money on these kinds of shows that are degrading America. It doesn't make any kind of sense. Somebody said to me about Ritz Crackers the other day. They said, you know, Michael, Ritz Crackers, my son and my grandson were working there. And I said, oh, it's a shame that they went to Mexico. I said, are you buying Ritz Crackers? I'm not. And she said, yeah, no, I'm not either. And so that's the way you have to be. You have start talking facts. Ritz moved out of Northeast Philly, and they went to Mexico. God bless them.
Yeah, Mike, I'd like to say, like, the media right now watching it would be like the Patriots, that you either love them or hate them, but Brady. And, you know, they won the Super Bowl, say, and all the media would show is the fumbles, Brady picking his nose, all the bad stuff. But they won. you know, that's what the media does, just looks at the bad, grabs them little bites that aren't really true, the ugliest face they can show, talk about negative. It's just disgusting, really.
I can't argue about anything with Brady because he's Irish and Polish, so we have to treat him with kid gloves.
No, but I love that. I'm saying, but they won the Super Bowl, but the media would still show the bad fumbles and whatnot.
Yep, and that's the way they want to focus. You know what I want to say? And I'm going to go to Rich first. I think that the media is trying to pull the American people down.
Yes.
Not let them see that good things are happening. Before we go to Larkin, Rich, how are you doing, and what has happened that interests you this week?
Hey, guys, good morning, and welcome to everybody. And 20 days, Michael, 20 days until Election Day. Remember in the lead up to 2016, doesn't that seem like yesterday?
Isn't it unbelievable how that time went?
It just goes so fast, and there's so much going on. And you guys got, and Michael, you guys got an important race. I've been following your Senate race with Casey and Lou Barletta. I formed with my producer a super PAC earlier this year, and one of the races to watch is the Casey Barletta Senate race. And so let's see what happens in that race. But I've been down here in Florida, we're me and Larkin are of course, you know, the eyes of the country, because the old saying is Florida goes, so goes the nation. So me and Larkin, all eyes on us again, and no one cares about Mark, because up in where Mark lives, even the Republicans are Democrats. So we don't really pay attention too much there. But you know, Michael, as a former reporter, if I can make a comment on your media comment, as a former reporter, I knew my area. I covered local politics. I covered local stories. I knew my area pretty well. I knew what people were concerned about. I knew what they liked, what they didn't like. I had sources whom I personally liked very much, and I had sources whom I didn't like very much. Now, I'll never name names because it isn't important. What was important is that I treated everybody, the ones I liked and didn't like, I treated them the same with fairness. And and as fair as I possibly could have been, Michael. The problem with legacy media, and if you watch the 60 Minutes broadcast the other night, 60 Minutes, I used to watch religiously. I've met Don Hewitt, the former producer of 60 Minutes, who's now deceased. He spoke at my alma mater. Some of the work that 60 Minutes has done in its history, from, you know, the Timothy McVeigh interview to the Jeffrey Wigget interview with the tobacco whistleblower. I mean, they've done some of the finest work in American journalism history. And the other night, when I watched Leslie Stahl meet with the president, I think right the other night, is when, you know that song American Pie, you know, the day the music died?
Oh, yeah.
I think that was the final death knell of American legacy media with 60 Minutes, which could always be relied upon to be a stalwart of some objectivity. And I watched an interview where, you know, if you go and watch the entire thing, Michael, all you see is a deliberate attempt to be combative, you know, a deliberate attempt. And if you guys notice, for your listeners, Michael, Leslie Stahl actually admitted in her interview with the president, admitted it for the entire country to hear, that President Obama did not enforce immigration policy at the border. She actually said it, and there's crickets. Have you guys heard this from anyone else?
Yep.
Throughout legacy media, that a president, now listen, all presidents, Michael, look, not all laws are enforced. I get that. There's laws that President Trump won't enforce. I get all that. But she actually admitted, Leslie Stahl said, the president never enforced the law that Congress passed about what to do at the border with families crossing. And nothing. An admission of lawlessness on 60 Minutes. And there's nothing that you heard about. It's so unfortunate. But, Michael, you know, here's the thing. I'll just say this last point before we get to Larkin. Everybody's got to keep their eye on the ball. You know, 20 days to go, and everybody who's registered, you know, thank you. Everybody who's not, shame on you. You took yourself out of the game. And And if you took yourself out of the game, you know, it means that you're still influencing the outcome. To everybody who takes themselves out of the game, they're still going to influence the outcome. And where you are, Michael, staying home on Election Day is helping Democrat candidates. And that's not necessarily pro-GOP. I'm just stating a demographic fact. Same for where me and Larkin are down here. So if you're registered, you know, everybody can do a little bit between now and Election Day, Michael, but the bare minimum is to get out and vote. Bare minimum.
Absolutely. I just to add to that point before we go to Larkin, I had a very interesting conversation with the voter registration board people, and they said, well, even though many of the cities have the same amount of people that they had living in there, say, 5 and 10 years ago, today with the illegals and the people who came here legally not becoming citizens and not registering to vote, there is a lot less people in that same geographic area that are not eligible to vote and will not vote. So they don't really have a say in what's going to be happening, who their representative is. So through the census, we are seeing the population has grown, but the voter registration remains flat. With that, let's hear from Larkin.
Good morning, Michael, Rich, Mark, Henry, and to our listening audience. It's a beautiful day in Florida, as I'm sure Rich will attest to. I will tell you this. Rich brings up a very interesting point, not one that I had really on my list here, but the election in Florida is huge, this coming election. It is enormous. And I know that Rich says that every election is huge. This is the most important election we've ever had in the history of this country. but the fact is, Rich is correct, because the stakes keep on going up. And they go up and they go up. And we are now in the state of Florida voting for a governor, and it's capitalism versus democratic socialism. It is that simple. It is that left and right, up and down, fat, skinny. It's that distinctive. You either are going to vote for capitalism or you're going to vote for democratic socialism. This Andrew Gillum guy that's running, it's just absolutely amazing what this guy is proposing. And if you don't vote, shame on you. And if Gillum wins, which is at this point, Rich, my prediction, we're in for a long ride. And the number one physical economy in the country, Florida, number one, I'll guarantee you two things. We won't be number one inside 12 months. We will not be, period, amen. We know that Democrats tax and spend. And fiscal strength is surrounded by the fact that you don't spend more money than you have. And Gillum is going to give an instant 30% raise to teachers. Instant. On the spot. You teach, you're active, bam, 30%. Who's paying for that?
Well, that is an election ploy to get the teachers and their families to vote. Well, you know, Larkin, in this last 2 months, especially since Labor Day, so many of these political people ask for money, never ask about what are the major concerns of the people that you know, your family or whatever. They never talk about what they're going to do to make jobs more of a priority. Nothing. It's just, I need money to defeat this person. Sure. I don't understand it.
What amazes me, though, is that the left is revving up a tax on capitalism. Just as workers are on the bottom rung, our workers are starting to begin to benefit from this booming U.S. economy. And what the left is doing is saying capitalism doesn't work. If you put in an hour and Joe Smith puts in an hour, you're 50% productive and he's 125% productive. You both deserve $15 an hour. That's just not what this country was built on. According to the last week's jobs report, unemployment was pushed back to its lowest point since 1969. Wages in the blue-collar industry, such as construction and maintenance, they're all rising faster than white-collar workers. Pay for people without a college education raised 6%, the last report that was out. 6%, twice as fast as any other category.
It's incredible.
And yet the left is saying this doesn't work.
I don't know.
It's hard to sell, though, Larkin.
I might be smoking the pipe, but what the hell does that mean? It doesn't work. Every person that calls here looking for people, calls our agency, saying, could you send someone over? And we would appreciate someone who has this particular skill, but we're willing to train. As we talked about 2 months ago or so, if we could get something in the budget where a company was given some money to help train that person, then I think more and more companies would even bring more and more people on. But so, training people is expensive, as Mark can tell us.
Absolutely.
You know, somebody's got to tell that to Bernie Sanders. He's waging this blistering attack against Amazon and its subsidiary Whole Foods. Because they came out and said, okay, we announce a minimum wage. Everybody that works for us is going to make no less than $15 an hour. Well, guess what happened to the guy that was making $12 an hour plus a performance bonus? He lost ground. And now Sanders is saying, well, that sucks. That doesn't work. You cut his pay. Well, no, wait a minute. Do you want to pay him $15 an hour? Or do you want to pay him $12 an hour with a chance to make $16 or $17 an hour?
That's right. That's correct.
You just can't raise your expenses without knowing what the competition and what the perceived value is on products. I mean, I live and breathe this business. We're in a fight of our life to come out of a major, major debt hole. We just had a major meeting. You can't just, you know, Lark, you know, raise these prices and dictate what people are going to pay people. The company has to do well enough. Everybody gets a paycheck at my company, but their mistakes, the things they do, everything's covered in that. So you always got to know what you're bringing in, what you're putting out, and you got to feather that over 12 months of a year. So anybody that dictates what I've got to pay out, I've got a problem with. They've got to earn it here, and we've got a great system, and they earn it, and it runs on a ladder.
Mark, you know, Mark just wants to be, as a business owner, Mark wants to be left alone. All the businesses Larkin has advised, they want to be left alone, Michael. Henry wants to be left alone. I just want to be left alone. I'm not saying we do whatever we want, anarchy. That's not what I'm saying. But when the president ran on cutting regulations, remember the promise? For every new regulation, we cut 12? Well, I was just reading the most recent report from it's called the Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs. For every new regulation issued by the federal government, 12 were cut. 12. And the estimates are savings of $23 billion for this fiscal year. $23 billion. Now, Michael, if that estimate is 50% correct, that's $11.5 billion saved in regulation. And what has quote-unquote, Larkin, coincidentally happened since regulation got cut? Well, America's economy back to being the most competitive, which should have never, ever not been the most competitive. Okay, in the world. So you've got that. You've got the highest number of income taxes the Treasury has ever collected, which, to be fair on that point, Michael, under President Obama, income taxes collected were rising as well. Okay, let me be fair on that point. And you've got small business optimism at record high.
Absolutely.
In decades, you haven't seen it. All of those things are not a coincidence. They're not a coincidence, Michael. So when you watch this in motion, regulation cuts, tax reform, small business growth and optimism, collection of income tax coming in, this idea of raising taxes right now, that's like taking a bazooka to the progress we've made. It will just blow it into smithereens. Whether it's in Florida where me and Larkin are, because this election down here in Florida, well, I'm going to tell you guys, Michael, you up in Pennsylvania, you're a majority red state right now, Michael. I know you have a Democrat governor, but you had Corbett before Wolf. And a Democrat, this guy Gillum winning down here will have repercussions throughout the country. It will happen because Florida will dictate and influence. Right now, this idea of raising taxes, raising spending, all this is going to do is take 2 years of progress and just blow it up. That's all it's going to do.
Well, there's no question this democratic socialism is going to tank the economy. And how it leaches into Washington, D.C., Democratic presidential wannabe Elizabeth Warren introduced last week the Accountable Capitalism Act, which would give workers control of 40% of every corporate board seat in this country with veto power over corporate decisions. Think about that for a while. Give that just a little bit of thought. That is in committee right now, Accountable Capitalism Act. And those people want to tell me they're pro-business? Get the heck out of here.
Did she hear that on the tribe, on the tribal grounds?
Well, no, she wants the Cherokees. She wants a Cherokee sitting on every board in the country.
But, Michael, do you guys know? I was telling someone today, I just created the Mount Rushmore for the Democrats. You want to know who's on the Mount Rushmore? Stormy Daniels, Colin Kaepernick, Che Guevara, and Vladimir Lenin. That's their Mount Rushmore right now.
Oh, that's going to be a shirt.
We've got Roosevelt, Lincoln, Jefferson, and Washington. Let's build it on the other side in South Dakota. We're going to build the opposite Mount Rushmore. Stormy, Che, Vlad, and Colin. That'll be the new 10 Mount Rushmore.
Oh, well said, Rich. Very well said. I love it. Well, you know what? All this is, see, we're repeating what we're seeing in the news media. You turn it on, you can't escape it. You turn this station, you turn to this station. They're all repeating the same rigmarole. There is something that I think that every business person in America has to do with their employees. Number one, they have to tell the people how much it costs to maintain the business. And in order to pay the people, you have to make a profit. Is that right, Mark?
Absolutely.
No profit, you can't pay people.
Exactly.
And the people do not realize that you have to pay employment insurance, unemployment insurance. You have to pay workers' insurance if you are able to do that as a business. You also have to pay the FICA taxes. You have to pay so many of these things in addition to the rent and all the lighting and gas and everything else. They don't understand that.
Mike, you're hitting a big point because they don't understand how hard it is to make $1.
That's right.
And they don't understand out of a year of 12 months, like a retail store, the last 3 months, possibly 2 months, is everything. For 10 months, you don't make anything. You're putting out money because you're keeping your trained employees. You give them a paycheck every week. Then you have to make it back. But most people, you're hitting on a good thing, most people do not understand business at all, do not understand how to make a dollar or what it takes and all the expenses, which is called COGS, cost of goods sold, what the cost of the sale, they don't understand how hard it is to make $1, and then the government may take half of that in taxes if you made the $1.
You know, Larkin, would you agree that we should have some kind of a broadcast and maybe even a presentation on the internet to allow people to understand? I think some people would like that, but that would be fine for us to do. But how about it be done on CNN, Fox, and all these Fox Business? Let's introduce the common cost of operating a business to the everyday American. Most people don't understand. Most people say they're making a lot of money. Look at how the cash register's ringing. And I say to them, that's right. Maybe the cash register's ringing, but every penny that goes in there is not profit. That's the biggest problem.
Mike, people don't realize that.
There are so many factors. Larkin knows this. Everybody with a business knows this. And we're not sitting here with our hands out, right? We're not sitting here saying, woe is us, lamentation. No. There is so much that goes into making a business successful and solvent. You have profit. You have cash flow. You have accounting. You need to have the right staff, right? You have turnover. Go into any restaurant, Michael. Any restaurant where the same staff is there for years, you don't even need to taste the food. You know it's good. You know it's good already. Go into a restaurant where there's new staff all the time. Any business. And you'll know that it's lacking in its quality, There's so much that goes into it. It's why I say we just want to be left alone so we can focus on growth, on expansion, right, what Mark has done. It's amazing, actually, that Mark has been able to expand the way that he has, especially being in New York, because New York is another state, which I got out of New York, Larkin, and all the reasons I moved to Florida were at, you know, I'm at risk of losing those reasons now. Right?
You're right. Election, I mean, we're in the boot camp. We're in the toughest state in the country to do business, and it's sad because I love the area and got family here, but very difficult. And you don't want Florida, like you said, to become New York.
Very well said.
Oh, well, please. Oh, please. Oh, please. Don't.
Well, there, you know, now is the time for the people that are running for re-election to get a positive message out to the people. And that's all this back and forth, throwing mud here and there. It's really a waste of time to somebody like me. I want to know what you're doing. Guys, by the way, for several years, we've been promoting the Buy American Made campaign, urging people to look at the labels when they go shopping. In just 14 days, we're going to begin another year of promoting American Made Month. It's hard to believe, Mark. It's another year. And as Mark said earlier, it's the last quarter of the year. We have to do something positive, get the people into the businesses, get the people looking at the labels. It was really started on this broadcast to encourage people to look at the American Made label. And I think we did a good job. It's a positive campaign. Nobody can say, oh, they hate this or that. No. People with proclamations, we're going to do this and that. They're great, but we really need the American people to proclaim and support American Made Month and their local stores, so forth and so on.
Yeah, well, I agree with you. And just to add one more point, and I think this is kind of what Mark was saying. Elizabeth Warren and our very very good friend from up north, Senator Sanders, have never met a payroll.
Yeah, you got
it's
it, Larkin.
It's very unique
for
me to sit down. I've got a brand new client. I'm trying not to take on any new ones, but this guy was just way too interesting and way too passionate about what he was doing. So I sat down, and an engineer, and he genuinely did not have the business acumen to start a company. And after we went through a three-year projection, he went, I had no idea. Well, that's what I hear all day, every day from people that I mentor. They don't understand the complexity of business.
Absolutely.
But even more than that, they don't understand how important small businesses and big businesses to the economy of this country. People don't want to leave the United States. They want to come here for the opportunity. And where does that opportunity come from? It sure as hell is not Washington, D.C.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I bought a bottle of water at the train station, Larkin, for $2.87. That was tax included. A bottle of water. I couldn't believe it. But that's Washington, D.C., the capital of the world. Can't understand
it. But shortly before my father died, just to supplement that story, I can't even remember where we were, but we came up to a counter, and I was thirsty as a horse. And my father ordered a cup of coffee, and I said, I'll just have water. And they handed me a bottle of water, and I paid $4 or $5 for the coffee and the water. And my dad's over there, and he goes, wow, did you pay money for that? And I said, yeah. He whacked me right in the back of the head. You just bought a bottle of water? Now, if my father were alive today, he'd be 107. But whacked me in the back of the head and said, you just bought a bottle of water. You just spent money that you earned buying water in a bottle. And I said, yeah, I did. And he just said, you see that water fountain over there? We could probably get from here all the way home again, skipping from water fountain to water fountain. You could have saved $2. What do you say?
Well, that's a point. They get you for everything that they possibly can. But that's okay. That's the fair market. I mean, probably the rental there at the station in Washington is very expensive. So if you want to be in there, you have to pay the money. The thing is that everyone is talking about the fact that we are on a positive road and we have to do something to get more and more Americans focused on the positive road. Mark said earlier, help wanted signs everywhere, even in the stores, the coffee shops, everything is help wanted, help wanted. There are more workers going to work in the morning, going to the coffee shops to get their coffee. They need additional people. Some of them are bringing in part-time morning workers to handle the crowds. This is all positive. I don't understand why the news media is not focusing on this, but rather trying to discourage the people and make them look down instead of looking up. My grandmother once said, look straight, look happy, look with a smile. When you look down, it's like looking at someone's shoes and the dirt on the street. And I tried to do that all the time. But the fact of the matter is we don't have leaders in our states and in our cities and in our townships urging people to be uplifted, positive. Let's support one another. It doesn't happen. It's support me, and I'll do the best. And when once I'm in office, don't call me because I'm too busy.
So are we ready for a new idea?
Yes.
Mark laughs, and it's genuinely a very well-placed laugh because my next idea is so far off the wall, it's not even funny. You talked about buying a bottle of water in the Washington train station. Well, as far as I can tell, one of the highest cost of living cities in the country, and I know it's top five, is Washington, D.C. And the genesis of that is how much money they pay people in that city. So I thought, well, I'm going to dig through this and find out. Ultimately, my idea is to take every department in Washington, D.C. that doesn't have something to do with a common defense and move it away. I'd like to move the Department of Commerce to Buffalo, New York. Get the heck out of Washington, D.C. and go up there and run commerce if you're going to do it. I'd like to take Health and Human Services and move it to Fort Lauderdale. And take the Housing and Urban Development and move it to Houston. Homeland Security, that might be a stretch. Obviously, Defense and Department of State have to probably stay in Washington because of the relationship between the Congress and the Pentagon. And that's what we founded this country on. And I think you would agree with that, Mark, and Rich. The country was, you know, the United States government's purpose is to provide a common defense. So, and I thought, well, we'll move the Department of Education. You know what their budget is? Department of Education, annually, their budget, it's $68 billion. Department of Education.
Now, is that only for the Washington Bureau?
That's for the Washington Bureau. Well, that's the Department of Education's total budget, and I'm embarrassed to say for 2016, because we've been running on omnibus, we haven't had a budget. So, but it's 2 years ago, $68 billion. If we were to eradicate education, which I think is, should have been done years ago, we could take that money and give $1.4 billion to the state of Pennsylvania and say, here's the deal. We really think you need to raise your teachers' wages. And we think you don't want to build any more schools and do all of that candy stuff that gives politicians an opportunity to give out money so that they can get kickbacks. Nah, don't want that. No, 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 build any schools or improve the roads or build a new gymnasium. It's just a deal with what we have. That one-room schoolhouse worked for so many years. and just give that money back.
You're right, Laura. You're right. And yeah. I'll give you one good for instance of this. Now that the colleges are not getting the unbelievable amount of people registering to flock to the colleges to put the kids in debt, they're now starting to really beg for people to fill their seats. Now the people are saying, how much exactly does it cost for the teacher, for the administration, for the upkeep of the building? People are beginning to ask questions like never before. So I think we have to do that kind of promoting as well. We have to start asking people to ask questions of their school boards, of their politicians, of their local community groups. Ask, what is really the cost of operations? And, you know, Mark, do you agree with that?
Yeah. No, I definitely agree. Because they have to know where the money is. Like in New York with education, Larkin, you're hitting a good point, but our lottery monies that are raised are supposed to go offset the education, and I myself pay $70,000 in school tax. I use that number. It knocks people off their socks because they can't believe how much, but I can't believe how our lottery system's supposed to offset. We've done some studies. It just doesn't, the math doesn't add up. So, Mike, yeah, they should be held accountable and responsible for what they're bringing in, what they're spending out, what they need to operate, and who's getting paid what.
That's right. And, you know, with the Internet, there's no way, reason it can't be posted on the Internet, any particular college, any particular school. If a teacher is worth his weight in gold or her weight in gold, why not list what they're making? I wouldn't feel embarrassed to know if I was being paid a particular amount of money. I would say, hey, that is what I'm worth. Why are they hiding it? The fact is that too many people were getting all these different benefits, and now it's coming back to haunt them. All the big corporations with the benefits for the senior workers and the retirees, most of these companies can no longer afford it. So they're all struggling along. The colleges are struggling along. The tenured teachers that teach only a certain amount of hours a week, all of that has to be exposed and presented. If a teacher only has a certain amount of hours a week, well, maybe it's time to pay them less.
Well, listen, the fact remains, and this is the final insult, and we can move on. This is the final overburdening, unbelievable, egregious insult upon insult. The average salary of a Department of Education employee, is $84,000 a year. It is over twice what this country pays its teachers. It's an insult. It's a raging insult. A raging insult. And the fact that people in Washington, D.C. would allow this to happen for 10 minutes only tells you that it's their pockets that they're worried, that they're trying to line. At an educational, an average, 84, that means half are making less than 84 and half are making more than 84. 84 is the mean salary of the Department of Education. They're paying educational statisticians $124,000 or $125,000 a year. A statistician for sitting around creating pie graphs or whatever the hell statisticians do.
You know, Larkin, I want to clarify something. You mentioned how much the cost of the budget is for education in Washington. Now, that doesn't include the cost of education in the towns and cities and states.
$68 billion
is strictly to operate that monstrosity in Washington, which I have no idea what it does. And I think that money, I think that whole thing should be dismantled, and it should go to the states and the cities, the states mainly, to operate their school systems, because now the teachers, I'm pleased to say, and I'm glad that Mark is hearing the same thing, more and more teachers are saying, we must graduate skilled workers. We have to graduate people who know how to balance a checkbook. We have to graduate people who have some confidence to go on an interview. That's not happening today.
That's right. Well,
I heard, I mean, Michael, I heard Mark at the outset talk about getting tough with our youth, right, Mark? I heard you say that.
Absolutely.
Correctly. And for parents out there who don't want to be tough on their youth, I mean, you got to be loving and fair, but you got to be tough. That's what I talk about in my 10 Warning Signs Your Child is Becoming a Democrat book. That will be out next year. We have to ask ourselves, what is the cost of not being tough on our youth? You know, and you want to talk about education costs, Michael. We spend over, and I remember this number from an article I wrote about this, that we spend over $15,000 per student in public education, Larkin, in the country. Now, when we hear that we spend $15,000 per student, that doesn't mean that $15,000 is spent educating a child. That means that $15,000 is spent per child for salaries and benefits and perks and fringe benefits, which puts us only behind Switzerland and Norway for education spending. So the reason that Switzerland can do that and Norway can do that is because the only people who live in Switzerland are Swiss people, and the only people who live in Norway, Michael, are Norwegians, where it's a Caucasian, blonde-haired, blue-eyed country that doesn't accept immigrants. Now, do not misconstrue what I'm saying as an anti-immigrant comment. That's not what I'm saying, Michael. What I'm saying is that those nations that Democrats want all of us to aspire to, even though no one in Vermont wants to be like California, right, Larkin? So we want to aspire to all of these tiny little countries whose government and economic models are nothing at all like ours. We spend a lot of money on public education, Michael, a lot. And I think that the American people as a whole are starting to ask what the return on that investment has been.
I think that's a question that has to be answered in the next year or 2 years. It has to be posted that you and I can go up on the internet and look at what the amount of students are we have in the country, how many are graduating, what is their average, you know, within their scholastic range. We have to put all that so that people know. If they are lower than 60%, then we have to know that. If they're higher than 80% in any given school district, we should know that. When people say it's a poor school district, I don't buy that, because we're supposed to provide education for every American at the same level. Every American. We are all Americans. We salute one flag. We should have one educational system, one quality of education, and not because you're in a poor city, it costs us more money and you're getting less quality teachers, less quality education. That's all nonsense. I thought that what they were doing in Washington when they instituted the Board of Education, they were supposed to monitor all that. I don't see that as being monitored. Do you?
No.
No, not at all.
No, they really aren't. And what do they know about what should be taught in East Bumswich, Iowa? What do they know? There's nobody from East Bumswich, Iowa working there. They just make these wild-ass guesses that what's good for Philadelphia has just absolutely got to be good for St. Louis. And East Bumswich, you fall in line because this is the way, you know, no. All politics are local. Education, equally amount. Education should be local also. I'll educate my kids. I'll take care of my kids. When my kids were in school, I went to those meetings. I knew what was going on. I never missed, or one of us never missed a parent-teacher meeting. There was a concern, and grades were demanded. And, you know, I get this stuff. I got it last weekend. I almost lost my mind. So, the kids really have changed. I don't know. All these grown-ups sitting around the table going, these kids have changed. Kids haven't changed.
What exactly does that mean, kids have changed?
Kids have changed. They're harder to raise. They know too much. They blah, blah, blah. And I'm going, wait a minute. Kids haven't changed. Kids don't know anything about anything. When they come out of the womb for the first 10 years, they're a bundle of blob that needs cleaned up for the first 3 years. You know, listen, we've changed as adults, not the kids.
We've become too weak, too soft.
We expect less of our kids. We make their lives easier instead of preparing them for what life really is. We plop them down in front of a TV with a game thing, whatever those things are. We give them iPads and let them sit on the iPads for hours and hours and hours. And kids have changed. Kids haven't changed. You're molding a mind there. You've changed. The parents have changed. Kids don't know anything from anything.
And by the way, you're right, Larkin. And you know, learning a work ethic is allowing a young person to pick things up, do things, give them chores, you know, take them out to the library, take them out to the stores, not to go grab, I want this, and cause hell, but to show them, you know, we buy this, we enjoy this for dinner. Kids are not being taught that. They're sitting in the cars with their games while the parents are shopping. I see it right all the time.
Well, you know, these people come off the buses and they're very emotional, the veterans and all different people. Lately, they've been very emotional about what we're doing. But this lady came up to me and said, you know, parents have to be parents, not friends of their kids. And I think she nailed it. And we're all guilty of that. But they got to be parents.
You're right. This is that's a great statement. I hear it from time to time, but not enough. And this is also something that should be on all these national news media places. They should interview parents. Yes, Larkin.
Mark brought something up that has always brought up something. Mark and Rich both. Everybody gets a trophy. All you got to do is put on the uniform and show up, and you're going to get a trophy.
Yeah.
We don't teach them how to lose. We don't teach them how, if you work, you win. We don't teach them how to listen. There is nothing I would like to be more right now. Nothing I would like to be more right now, this very point day in my life, than a PGA golfing professional touring out there and playing different country clubs every weekend. But guess what? It never, ever, ever is going to happen. And for this, everybody gets a trophy, and if you want it bad enough, get up there and just give it all. Hell no. Come on, guys.
Yep, I agree. And you get the trophy even if you show up half the time for the games.
All you got to do is be on the roster at the end.
Right, and that's the shameful part of the entire thing. And that's the reason why I think that so much of what we talk about here on the broadcast, of course, we're promoting American workers, the Buy American Made campaign, but we're also talking about common sense, bread and butter issues. When people go out to the stores, they have to start looking out not only for what they want to buy, but how are they able to help the American people, their brothers and sisters, their neighbors, to keep a job and make sure that they're able to support themselves. Because so many of our jobs moved overseas, we had growing programs, all these welfare programs, all these specialty programs that hid the fact that there was so much unemployment in America. And in addition to the unemployment, you have a large number of people that have been out of the workforce for a long time and are not listed. So we have probably tens of millions of people that could use a job, and it's a fact. We have millions and millions of people that need a job right now. In order to get them into the workforce, look for American Made and shop your local stores. Make sure you spread the word, because you are really helping the bread and butter issue of America, and that is jobs. When you have a job, you know yourself. You have a job, you are on the road to success. If you don't have a job, you have a lot of stress in your life. Rich.
I'm going to just say, Michael, that with the youth issue, which is one of the key issues that I talk about on my show and in my, you know, my book, everything I do, This is where I got to tell Tim at the station to get the sensor button ready when I get on this issue, because having a 2-year-old daughter, Michael, and then with having another girl on the way, which I'm debating, Mark, does that mean I carry two firearms or one bigger one? this is always at the forefront with education, and I keep joking, and one day, the only time I'm ever going to run for office, Michael, it's going to be school board, and I already have my campaign slogan ready: education, not indoctrination. That's my slogan. That's what I'm going to run as a school board member. And what we have done for our youth, Michael, my God, we have failed them. I tell that to young people all the time, but I make them a promise that we're going to reverse course. I believe that we can. I think everything happening in the country now, Michael, lends itself to us changing how we approach raising kids. Kids are not activists. They're kids. They shouldn't be out there. 16-year-old doesn't know what James Madison really meant when he wrote the Second Amendment. And we have so far removed ourselves from that, but I really think we can get back to that. I have no doubt everything happening right now. So that's one of the things that really, the issues that really informs me. And Larkin's 100% correct on this point.
You know, Richard, I have to tell you this. I'm going to ask you to do something. I know that she's a little small yet to get onto the school board, but I think you should be on the school board now so that by the time Isabella and all others in your family are ready to be in school, they've already had it fixed by their dad.
Very good.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, Rich, you got the gift of knowing how to present it. If somebody has to do it, don't wait until Isabella's ready to be in school. Do it now so when she gets in, it's already fixed. Well, ladies and gentlemen, as you can see by the clock on the wall, it's time for us to end our broadcast for today. I want to thank Larkin Connolly, Rich Logis, Mark Andel, our engineer, Henry Chaplinsky, and I'll ask that you send out a copy of today's broadcast to your family members and friends, and let's get them on our list. Sign up for our e-list on the front page of AmericanWorkersRadio.com and click on Rich Logis's picture and hear the Rich Logis show. And also go on the front page and on the right side, right under the AmericanWorkersRadio.com link, you will see American Made in America store and the Made in America radio show with Mark Andel. Larkin, thank you so much. Thank you again, Rich and Mark. Until this Saturday at 11 or next Wednesday at 11, best wishes to you and yours. Stay well and be happy.
Have a great week, guys.